Well, good morning. If you were here at 9 o'clock last Sunday morning, you may find a sense of déjà vu. I was asked to speak about action to the 9 o'clock congregation last Sunday, and in a sense to repeat that material this morning, although the title is Time. For last week, I planned to speak really about busyness. And I suspect that if I'd started to plan something on time, I would have ended up on the same material. So, without apology, I want to give you some talk for a few moments about the pace of life that we live, and the fact that our Christianity should be in our heads, in our lives, and not just in our heads. It was the Apostle James who said that faith without works is dead, and that we should in fact demonstrate the reality of our faith by the way that we live our lives. And as I speak this morning, I might use the word work. And when I say that, I don't just mean paid employment. I mean the things we do, the tasks we undertake, the things that keep us busy. So when I say work, I mean studying, or ironing, or cooking the tea, or earning a wage. So this sermon is for all of us, whether we get pocket money, whether we get a wage packet, whether we get a gyro check, or whether we get a pension. So, our busyness, our work. In the story of creation that we began with, paradise includes working in the garden and taking care of it. Each day had some purposeful, creative activity, a bit of gentle hoeing, or trimming back the roses. And so by tea time, Adam and Eve were comfortably tired and ready to sit down with a glass of wine and listen to the archers. After the fall into sin, work became painful toil, sweat, struggle and pain. So when you think about your work, is it enjoyable or a struggle? How busy are you? I gave out a questionnaire a few Sundays ago and lots of people filled it in for me. I've got the results for you this morning, and perhaps the first slide could go up. Thanks, and John, thank you. If you're someone who's baffled by numbers, then you can just switch off the next moment as I explain this material. The statisticians in the congregation might need a few words of clarification. First of all, 159 people filled in the questionnaire for me. Look at question A. 52 people mark the centre of the spectrum, so I've not included them in those figures at all. Of the, 97 on the left-hand side, that's made up of 73 people who mark the extreme left-hand end of the spectrum, and a further 24 who mark somewhere between the extreme left-hand and the centre. So I've clustered those together to make 97 people who said, well, either they're always busy, always have more to do, or a long list of jobs awaits them, or they're kind of veering towards that rather than just comfortable, or in fact at the other end of the spectrum. So let's look at the first three questions. Question A shows that two out of every three people in St. Nick's, 97 out of 159, shows that two-thirds of people are always busy. Question B shows that one in three people find that busyness stressful. And question C shows that half the people in the congregation find themselves stressed by the demanding nature of their activity. So between one-third and two-thirds of the congregation are very busy with a large number of very demanding activities that cause them stress. So why? Why do we work so hard? Well, the first thing that I would want to underline would be some of the external pressures, some of the external realities which cause us to be busy and stressed from time to time. If your home needs extensive repair work, then you may well be very busy for a time. I think I've been decorating for longer than I can remember. If a member of your family needs a lot of care and help, then you may be very busy. If you've an examination to sit, or if you've just changed jobs, or if you're in one of those companies where they've double the output requirement and halve the labour force. It feels like you're working four times as hard, and indeed perhaps you are. These are very real pressures, and sometimes we can be very busy indeed because of those things. But work can also be addictive, and underneath addiction, very often, is pain. When I feel driven to run around like a headless chicken, then perhaps I need to check out what is hurting inside. Am I trying to cover over my sense of inadequacy by feeding it with the constant praise of other people? Maybe there's something in here about gender expectations. Perhaps our society expects men and women to do certain things. I understand from Roy's researches that women do more housework and watch less TV than their partners. Are we driven to live a frantic and a stressful life by the unwritten rules of our society? I think Jesus can set us free. Another reason for working too hard can be an enlarged sense of our own responsibility to put right the world's wrongs. My daughter's reading Animal Farm at the moment for GCSE. One of the characters in Animal Farm is Boxer, the horse. Every time there's a difficulty, Boxer responds by saying, "I must work harder." Note that personal pronoun, "I must work harder." This is a failure to admit our own smallness and helplessness. A sense of our own over-enlarged power and responsibility to try and do something about it all. And at the end of that road is faithlessness, because it's a focus on what I do rather than a focus on what God is doing. So why do we work too hard? Perhaps external expectations, perhaps our own addiction to work, perhaps the pressures that society puts upon us, and perhaps an enlarged sense of our own responsibility. What's the effect of working too hard? First of all, let's think about the small number of people in the church who live a quieter and less pressurized life. Note those numbers on the right-hand side. Just a tiny number of people. At most 10 out of 159. Only a couple of dozen people in the church overall who live much more quietly, who find that life is slower or boring and undemanding. If that sort of lifestyle is you, then it's easy to feel isolated. It's easy to feel that everybody else is rushing by and nobody has got time to make a friendship with you or share a special moment. And if you feel like this, maybe the problem is theirs and not yours. What happens when we get too busy? For those of us who get too busy, personal boundaries are often eroded. Can we have the next slide up, please? Personal boundaries are often eroded. People stay at the office until late, or take piles of work home. Or they become out-and-out Christians, out Monday, out Tuesday, out Wednesday. No time for quiet, no time for neighbours, no time for friends, no time for children. I've never heard of anybody lying on their deathbed wishing that they had spent more of their time in their life at work. I'm not saying where you should draw the boundaries between home and work and interests and church. But look at the survey, look at question D. 48 people said that they felt that their personal boundaries were often breached. One in three people in that survey said that to some extent they had a problem in the personal management of the boundary between work and church and home and other things. Problems in this area. So what else does being too busy do for us? Well, working too hard is bad for our health. Well in excess of 500 million working days are lost each year due to mental ill health. And that has something to do with stress, surely. The rate of heart disease and ulcers is surely rising. Work is bad for us, that level of overwork. Working too hard can lead to superficiality. The tasks we undertake are done with an absolute minimum of preparation, and they're quickly forgotten as we dash on to the next task, rather than reflecting and learning from what has happened. I go through patches where perhaps I've written a letter or two or three or ten in my workplace, and then the day later, perhaps I've not crossed it off my list, and I honestly cannot remember whether I've written it or not. I can't bring it to mind. Very much superficiality, dashing on, and no time to reflect and to learn from those experiences. The unreviewed life, the superficial life. What else? Working too hard can lead to emotional discontentment. We become weary of doing well. J. John compares us with a rocking chair, where there's lots of motion, but no progress. This can lead to a sense of futility, that all this work is ultimately meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And working too hard can mean that we forget the importance of play, of interests outside work and church. And sometimes I abandon recreational pursuits completely. What's your hobby? Sometimes I've no idea what to do with half a day or a day off. If you take out work and jobs and busy things, what do you do with it? Some of us have got out of the habit of taking recreation. Or we can use supposedly leisure time, play time, and fill it up with trivial pursuits, which in fact are neither restful nor creative. So being too busy is damaging. There are many other things I'm sure you can add. Being too busy can damage relationships. It can do many other things. So what are we going to do? We need to face up to the question, first of all, of whether we're going to speed up or slow up. I found, from long and painful experience, that a driven spirit, a continual round of activity, very neatly blots out the requirement to think, to review, to re-evaluate. Maybe we need to take a sensible look at the file of facts and the friends and decide which we want to keep. I'll say no sometimes is a much more grown-up attitude than boxer's attitude. I must work harder. I will do everything. And sometimes my busyness is a failure to face up and take responsibility for my lifestyle. Then I, and perhaps you, need to get back to faith, to get back to asking God what we should be involved in, and making sure that we're investing our limited time and effort in the right things. God has promised to provide a pathway of good works for us to walk in. And that pathway starts where? It starts with Jesus Christ. When we become a Christian, we abandon our own empire building, the work that establishes our own position and status and role. And we start to build somebody else's kingdom, the kingdom of God. It's a well-known phrase that we need to work smarter and not harder. What is smart work? Surely it's God's work. We need to remember Jesus' command that we should love God and love our neighbour. These two greatest commandments have to be kept in balance. If we try and love others without loving God, we simply get exhausted. And if we try to love God without loving others, we simply become irrelevant. Keep an eye on each goal and keep them in balance. And then we need to celebrate wholeness. Sometimes our lives are unbalanced between handwork and headwork. If you spend all day at a lathe, read a book in the evening. If you spend all day at a desk, then spend a bit of time in the evening repotting the yucca. As a church, we need to send out the right messages. The message we so often hear at the front is that we need more workers. I asked John Holt a few weeks ago to estimate how many vacancies there are in the St. Nick's notice board. We need so many more house group leaders, so many more musicians, so many more OHP operators. Overall, we need in this church to make it work somewhere between 80 and 160 additional people to fill all the jobs. There's a percentage unemployment rate across the congregation. Almost every church service includes a notice asking for an additional person to do this or an additional person to do that. At the first sight of this questionnaire, 51 people, one third of the congregation, said that they were willing to do more in the church. So, surely that means there's enough people. All we have to do is get better at matching the volunteers to the roles, finding the people. But there's another view about these figures. Who are the one in three people who have offered to do more? Perhaps some of them are already very busy indeed, overstressed, overstretched, and with their personal boundaries breached and perhaps out of control. Perhaps offering to do more in the church is yet another sign that their personal timetabling is out of control. Like a huge slot machine, the church is in danger of gobbling up more and more time, more as much as we're prepared to give, without a thought for the way in which our busyness is damaging our lives. By focusing on tasks rather than on personal growth. By focusing on tasks rather than on personal growth, the church unwittingly exploits members of the congregation and clergy by using up their skills and then discarding them. I challenge each person in the church who is trying to recruit for something. Come to the prayer meeting. Come and do this, come and do that. Ask first these questions. Should the activity be happening at all? Lord, please show me. Should this thing be happening in the first place? Ask God who I should invite to join in. And before asking a particular individual, find out how busy they are. And then, in your planning for that activity, create an exit door from every activity so that people can retire with dignity. So, to finish, there's a couple of things. One is that as we come to the end, I want to put up a questionnaire in a few moments. Not yet, please, just I'll mention. But a questionnaire on the use of Sundays. I asked here in the questionnaire, what do you do with your Sunday? As one indicator of how we use time for recreation, for refreshment, time that God calls us to. And I want to read a poem. But the challenge is this. Busy lives, lazy lives, superficial lives, or godly lives. What is our aim? The touch of his hands. My hands were filled with many things that I did precious hold, as any treasure of a king's, silver or gems or gold. The master came and touched my hands. The scars were in his own, and at his feet my treasures sweet fell shattered, one by one. I must have empty hands, said he, wherewith to work my works through thee. My hands were stained with marks of toil, defiled with dust of earth, and I my work did oft times soil and render little worth. The master came and touched my hands, and crimson were his own. And when, amazed, on mine I gazed, lo, every stain was gone. I must have cleansed hands, said he, wherewith to work my works through thee. My hands were growing feverish and cumbered with much care, trembling with haste and eagerness, nor folded oft in prayer. The master came and touched my hands with healing in his own, and calm and still, to do his will they grew, the fever gone. I must have quiet hands, said he, wherewith to work my works through thee. My hands were strong in fancied strength, but not in power divine, and bold to take up tasks at length that were not his, but mine. The master came and touched my hands, and might was in his own, but mine since then have powerless been, save his allayed thereon. And it is only thus, said he, that I can work my works through thee. Let's pray.